All right, everyone, let's dive right in. Today, we're tackling something that affects us all, whether we realize it or not.
Protectionism.
Exactly. And we've got a whole bunch of research, articles, opinions.
Oh, yeah.
All about how governments try to give their own industries an edge in the global market.
Mm.
And we're going to focus on one tool in particular, tariffs. But first, just to set the stage.
Sure.
What exactly do we mean by protectionism?
Well, at its core, protectionism is about a government stepping in to shield its industries from outside competition.
Right, like a parent protecting their kids.
Yeah, in a way. But instead of like hugs and bandages, we're talking policies that restrict imports or maybe give a boost to domestic production.
Okay, so it's not always a bad thing.
Not necessarily. Sometimes it can be about safety standards or making sure quality is up to par. Could even be about national security.
So there are legitimate reasons.
Definitely. But let's be real, more often than not, it's about giving local businesses a fighting chance.
Against those big, bad international companies. You got it.
Okay, that makes sense. But how does it actually work? What are some of the tools they use?
Well, one of the most common, and the one we'll be focusing on today.
Tariffs.
Bingo.
Okay, can you give me like a real-world example of how tariffs work?
Absolutely. Imagine you're online. You're finally going to buy that super soft sweater you've had your eye on.
Ooh, I love a good sweater.
Right. So you get to checkout, and it's suddenly way more expensive than you thought it would be?
Uh-oh.
That, my friend, could be a tariff in action.
Really? So that's what's happening.
It's a tax. Basically, the government slaps a tax on goods.
Imports, right.
Yeah, as they cross the border.
Right.
So that imported sweater is now pricier. And the hope is that you'll choose a similar sweater.
One that's made domestically?
Exactly.
So it's kind of like nudging shoppers subconsciously towards homegrown products.
You could say that.
You know, this whole tariff thing, it reminds me of former President Trump. He was big on tariffs, wasn't he? Oh, absolutely. His presidency, you could call it a masterclass in using tariffs as a negotiating tool, and some would say a weapon in trade wars.
That's a strong word.
Weapon. It got pretty intense. Remember that whole thing with Canadian softwood lumber?
Vaguely. Remind me.
So the U.S. and Canada, they have this ongoing trade dispute over softwood lumber. It's been going on forever.
Right, right.
And Trump, he decided to slap a hefty 20% tariff on Canadian lumber imports.
Oof, that's going to hurt.
It really inflamed the situation. Then there was the steel and aluminum thing.
Oh, yeah. Wasn't that with Canada and Mexico?
You got it. No. 25% tariff on steel, 10% on aluminum coming from both countries.
Wow. He wasn't messing around.
Nope. And of course, Canada retaliated. They put their own tariffs on U.S. products.
What kind of products?
Some are obvious, like American steel. But then there were some that were kind of funny, like maple syrup and ketchup.
Uh-huh. Really? Ketchup.
It felt like a playful jab back at the U.S.
I kind of love that. A little tariff humor. But did all this back and forth actually accomplish anything?
It definitely pushed everyone back to the negotiating table, all that tariff drama. It actually contributed to the renegotiation of NAFTA.
NAFTA, the North American Free Trade Agreement.
Yep. It got renegotiated into what we now know as the USMCA.
United States-Mexico-Canada Agreement.
Exactly.
Okay, so even though those tariffs were controversial, they did end up shaping a whole new trade deal. But what about the actual impact on the industries themselves?
Right.
And on regular consumers? Like, let's take steel, for example. What happened when those tariffs came into play?
Well, if we look at the data from Statistics Canada, we see a really interesting pattern. So right after the tariffs were imposed, Canadian steel exports to the U.S., they actually surged. It was like a sudden boom.
So it actually had the opposite effect at first.
In the short term, yeah. It seems like companies rushed to get their shipments in before those tariffs fully took effect.
Kind of like a panic buying situation.
Exactly. But that spike, it was short-lived. Once those tariffs really settled in, exports plummeted. It became way harder for Canadian steel to compete in the U.S. market.
It makes you realize that tariffs don't exist in a vacuum. There are reactions and adaptations and sometimes unintended consequences.
Mm.
Didn't Trump also impose tariffs on China?
Oh, absolutely. The U.S.-China trade war under Trump.
Yeah.
It was a major turning point in global trade. He placed tariffs on a whole range of Chinese goods, especially targeting the technology sector.
I see.
And actually, a lot of those tariffs, they're still in place today, even under the Biden administration.
So those decisions continue to have an impact, even years later. But what about the impact on everyday people, the ones who are actually buying these products.
That's such a crucial point, because while tariffs are often framed as protecting domestic industries, they can end up hitting consumers' wallets pretty hard.
Mm, how so?
Well, think about it. When imported goods become more expensive...
Because of the tariffs.
Right. That cost often gets passed on to the consumer. Higher prices for everyone.
It's like a hidden tax.
Exactly. And then there's another layer to this. When domestic producers face less competition from those cheaper imports, they suddenly have more freedom to raise their own prices. So now, not only are we potentially paying more for imported goods...
The domestic stuff goes up, too.
Exactly.
It makes you wonder, how effective are tariffs, really? Especially when you consider how consumers react to price changes.
That's where things get even more interesting. Because the success of a tariff often comes down to something called price elasticity of demand.
Price elasticity of demand. Okay, break that down for me. What exactly does that mean?
So imagine two products, your favorite brand of coffee.
Okay.
And a luxury car.
Got it.
Now, if the price of coffee goes up, even a little, you might switch brands. Or maybe you cut back on your daily caffeine fix.
I'd probably just grumble a lot.
Fair enough. But the point is, demand for coffee, in this case, is quite elastic. It's sensitive to those price changes. But if the price of that luxury car goes up, you might still be willing to pay a premium because you really want that specific car. Your desire isn't as influenced by the price, so the demand is more inelastic.
So the more elastic the demand, the more a price increase, like from a tariff, could actually backfire.
Exactly. Consumers might just switch to other products or cut back entirely, and that's what makes it tricky for policymakers. They're trying to find that sweet spot.
Where the tariff is high enough to make a difference.
But not so high that it triggers a huge drop in demand.
It's a delicate balance.
It really is, and that's just scratching the surface. Yeah. There are so many other factors at play. Availability of substitutes, consumer preferences, the overall economic climate. It gets complicated fast.
A lot of moving parts.
You could say that. Yeah, it shows you how much of a gamble tariffs can be. Governments are trying to predict how consumers will react, how businesses will adapt, and how other countries will respond.
It's like a high-stakes game of economic chess. And speaking of those tariffs on Chinese goods that we were talking about, and how a lot of them are still in place, let's imagine, just hypothetically.
Sure.
What if things escalated? What if... like a 60% tariff was slapped on all Chinese imports to the U.S.
Whoa. Okay, that would be a huge shift, that kind of tariff hike.
Yeah.
It would send shockwaves through the global economy. But there's one thing to consider.
What's that?
China's ability to retaliate directly with tariffs, it's actually limited.
Really? Why is that? I thought they were a major exporter to the U.S.
Oh, they are. But the trade imbalance is significant. China imports way less from the U.S. than the U.S. imports from China. So if they try to match tariffs dollar for dollar, they'd run out of U.S. products to target pretty quickly.
Ah, I see. So what would happen then? How would they respond to such a massive tariff?
Well, they've got other options. They could manipulate their currency, for example, make their exports cheaper and U.S. imports more expensive. Or they could target specific U.S. companies operating in China. Make it difficult for them to do business there.
So it could escalate beyond just tariffs.
Exactly. It could turn into a tit-for-tat exchange. Economic sanctions, retaliatory measures. And then there's the impact on global supply chains, which are already pretty strained.
Right. We've seen how interconnected the global economy is. Any disruptions can cause a ripple effect. But focusing on China for a second, if such a large tariff was imposed, wouldn't it just cripple their economy?
Not necessarily. See, China's been strategically shifting away from an export-dependent model. For years now, they've been investing heavily in domestic consumption, building up their internal markets.
So they're less reliant on exporting goods to the U.S. than they used to be.
Exactly. They've been kind of anticipating these trade tensions, preparing for them. They've been actively cultivating alternative trade partnerships through things like the Belt and Road Initiative.
Oh, yeah, the BRI. That massive infrastructure project. Spanning continents. It's been called a modern-day Silk Road.
Exactly. Connecting China to new markets, creating alternative trade routes. And it's working. China's exports to BRI countries have been steadily growing, helping to offset some of the slowdown in exports to the U.S.
So while the U.S. might try to limit trade with China through tariffs, China's opening doors to new markets elsewhere.
That's the strategy. Diversifying their economic relationships, reducing their dependence on the U.S. market, expanding their influence globally.
Playing 3D chess while others are stuck with checkers.
But what about those countries that are trading more with China? Aren't they worried about becoming too dependent on one partner?
It's a valid concern. A lot of countries are grappling with that. The U.S. has been warning its allies about the risks, getting too entangled with China's economic ambitions. But for many countries, especially developing nations, the economic opportunities China offers are just too tempting to resist.
So it's a balancing act. They're trying to reap the benefits of trade with China,
but also manage the potential risks.
Exactly. And it's creating a whole new geopolitical landscape,
right?
One where the U.S. is no longer the only economic superpower calling the shots.
It seems like we're entering a multipolar world where power and influence are more spread out, which has big implications for how trade is conducted and regulated.
Absolutely. The old rules are being rewritten, and it's not clear what the new ones will be. But one thing's for sure, tariffs will continue to be a tool that countries use to try to gain an advantage in this complex, ever-evolving global trade landscape.
But as we've seen, tariffs are kind of a blunt instrument. They can have unintended consequences and often lead to escalation rather than resolution. So what's the alternative? Is there a way to promote free and fair trade without resorting to protectionist measures?
That's the big question, isn't it? It's something that economists, policymakers, businesses around the world are all wrestling with right now. There are no easy answers. But I think the key is shifting our mindset away from this adversarial, zero-sum approach to trade.
So instead of viewing trade as a battle to be won,
right,
we need to start seeing it as a cooperative effort where everyone can benefit.
Exactly. It's about finding ways to promote fair competition, protect intellectual property, ensure that labor and environmental standards are upheld. It's about creating a level playing field that benefits both developed and developing nations.
It sounds like a tall order. Is there any precedent for this kind of cooperative approach?
Well, we do have organizations like the World Trade Organization, the WTO. They're designed to mediate trade disputes, set rules for international commerce. But as we've seen recently, the WTO is facing its own challenges. It's struggling to adapt to the changing realities of global trade.
Right.
To enforce its rules effectively.
So the WTO might be a good starting point.
Yeah.
But it might need some serious reforms to be more effective in a multipolar world.
That's one possibility. Or maybe we need to explore new mechanisms altogether for global trade governance, ones that are better suited to the complexities of the 21st century.
It's a fascinating challenge, and it has huge implications for the future of our interconnected world.
It really does. And as we move forward, it's crucial to remember that trade is ultimately about people. It's about connecting individuals, businesses, cultures across borders and finding a way to do that fairly and sustainably.
That's the ultimate goal. You know, it strikes me that trade at its core, it's about more than just exchanging goods and services. It's about exchanging ideas, cultures.
Perspectives.
Yeah, perspectives. And when we let fear and protectionism dictate our policies, we risk closing ourselves off to those exchanges.
That's a good point. When we build walls around our economies, we end up building walls around our minds too, limiting our exposure to new ways of thinking.
Innovations.
Right. Innovations, new opportunities, and ultimately that stifles growth and progress.
So how do we break down those walls? If tariffs are such a blunt instrument, are there any more nuanced tools we can use to navigate the complexities of global trade?
I think it starts with dialogue, transparency, a willingness to find common ground. Instead of those tit-for-tat tariffs, countries need to talk openly and honestly about their concerns and goals, work together to create a system of rules and regulations that promotes fair play, protects everyone's interests.
Yeah, it sounds like a tall order, especially with all the geopolitical tensions these days. But isn't that the role of organizations like the World Trade Organization?
The WTO.
Yeah, to be that neutral party, the facilitator of dialogue and cooperation.
In theory, yes. The WTO has played a huge role in reducing trade barriers, promoting global economic growth over the past few decades, at least.
Right.
But like we've been talking about, it's facing new challenges in a multipolar world. It needs to adapt to the changing dynamics of global trade, address concerns about its dispute settlement system, make sure it represents everyone's interests.
Not just the most powerful countries.
Exactly.
So reforming the WTO could be part of the solution. But what about the people who argue that globalization has gone too far? The ones who say it's led to job losses.
Environmental degradation.
Yeah, a widening gap between the rich and the poor. How do we address those concerns without resorting to protectionism?
that's where things get really interesting, because I don't think the answer is rejecting globalization entirely. I think it's about shaping it, guiding it towards a more sustainable and equitable path.
Okay, what would that look like practically?
It means investing in education and training programs to help workers adapt to the changing demands of the global marketplace.
Makes sense.
It means strengthening social safety nets for those who are displaced by trade disruptions. And it means enacting and enforcing environmental regulations.
To prevent that race to the bottom.
Exactly. It's about recognizing that trade can be a powerful force for good, but only if it's managed wisely, with a focus on shared prosperity.
Finding that balance between competition and cooperation, national interests and global solidarity.
Precisely. And that's a conversation we need to be having, not just at the government level or with international organizations, but in our communities, businesses, even as individuals. We all have a role to play in shaping the future of global trade.
Well said. It seems like we've come full circle in our deep dive today. We started by exploring the mechanics of protectionism, those tariffs, trade barriers, all aimed at shielding domestic industries.
And we've ended by recognizing that true economic strength comes from connection, not isolation, building bridges, not walls, embracing the complexities of a globalized world, and working together to make it more just, more sustainable for everyone.
It's been an incredible journey. We've broken down complex economic concepts, debated the merits of protectionism, explored the potential for a more cooperative approach to global trade.
And hopefully we've given our listeners a deeper understanding of what's at stake and the choices we face in this increasingly interconnected world.
I think that's the essence of a deep dive. Challenging assumptions, sparking curiosity, empowering our listeners to keep exploring these issues long after the episode ends.
Absolutely. The conversation doesn't end here. It's an ongoing dialogue, an evolving story that we all have a part in writing.
So to our listeners, we say this: stay curious, stay engaged.
Yeah.
And stay connected. The future of global trade, and really the future of our world, depends on it. Thank you for joining us on this deep dive.